Hello and welcome back to the Let's Get Wicked podcast, where we talk about nothing but the game Villainous by Ravensburger. And I am your host, Joker Jonesy. I am sadly not joined by my co-host, Headmaster Ditto, today. Ditto actually had to work tonight, so shout outs to Ditto. And I also do want to shout him out for the fact of how awesome of a podcast that he did last week. It was incredible. Now, the folks that I have on today's show don't even know what that podcast is about yet, but we have a wonderful cast and crew today. This is our first four-person episode since we badmouthed Ursula all the way back in the day. I want to introduce one person because they have this is their second time on the show. Brian Drums, how you doing?
Hello, I am good. How are you doing, Joker?
I'm doing well. Before we recorded this show, Discord went down. And I honestly thought everything was going to explode, but hey, we're here, we're alive, nothing's died yet.
Yeah, it happens.
Yeah, it happens. Our second guest is one of the newcomers to the show, not a newcomer to the server per se, Cincinnatus. Hello, Cincinnatus. Hey. How you doing this evening?
Good. Discord kind of threw me for a loop, but other than that, everything's been going well for the rest of my day, so.
That's good. I know. It's amazing how technology just makes everyone just, like, frustrated all of a sudden. We're like, oh, no, the sky is falling, you know? But, hey, it happens. But last but certainly not least.
It was a minor flip, and.
Yeah, I know. But last but certainly not least, we have Shatter Dice. Hello, Shatter Dice. How you doing?
Hello. I'm doing well.
Anything exciting? How's the Discord down for like 20 minutes doing for you?
The entire time I was just looking for other ways to contact you. It was great.
I know it was funny because right before the show, what is it? Brian got a hold of me through one way, and then Cincinnatus messaged me on Twitter, and then I saw Dice followed me on Twitter, and I was just like, wow, everyone wants to try to get a hold of me in all these different manners. I never realized I was so popular. It was kind of funny. But welcome to technology. But so we got an interesting show today. The reason why I actually have these three fellows with me today is because we're going to be talking about the competitive nature of Disney Villainous. And the reason why that we're having these three folks on with us today is because Brian and Cincinnatus actually participated in our first tournament. And Shatter Dice has also been relatively involved with our competitive community, as well as Cincinnatus and Brian Drums, that we've kind of formulated, kind of, I don't want to say in an official manner, but we're working on getting stuff up and running these past few weeks. And we just kind of want to dive in a little bit with the show, kind of get everyone's thoughts and feelings on, you know, how we feel about the competitive nature of Disney Villainous, where we kind of wanted to go, kind of some things that we've noticed. One of the things I do want to talk about today that I think is a little interesting with the competitive nature side of the game is play styles and kind of like who we think are like some really strong characters in this competitive meta that we have so far, you know, and maybe some recommendations for those of you who want to get into competitive Villainous and how you should do it. So anyway, the floor is now wide open. How we feel about the competitive nature of Disney Villainous that we have started?
Well, I'll start off, I guess. I think the big thing I've noticed is the game is far more balanced than I ever expected. When you originally did your tier list, and when I originally like was thinking about some of these characters, I had them much more spread out. The bad characters were I considered much worse, and the good characters I considered much better. And now that has all been compressed a lot as we've kind of tried to make each character competitive.
I agree. I think one of the things that I've definitely have done myself is that after the tournament, well, I think the biggest thing we took away from the tournament was Captain Hook is really good. Can we all agree on that?
Yes.
Yep. Yes.
Yeah. I know that makes Brian sad because Captain Hook is Brian's favorite character, so we're all going after his main right now. But the thing, though, is I think we wanted to all try to find characters to not only beat Hook, but find ways to take the characters that weren't represented in the tournament and actually try to bring them into a more competitive light and really show how strong they are. For those of you who aren't part of the Discord, I have been really pranking some Urthel lately. And boy, oh boy, Brian can attest that my Urthel game has gotten good, to say the least.
Yeah. Yeah, most definitely. It kind of feels, it mostly feels that with this game, we kind of, like Cincinnati said, we really, I mean, I know I did it too, even before I got the chance to meet you guys and I was just playing with my wife and my family. We had our preconceived notions of who were the best characters and who were the trash characters. And I know that you and you and I, Joker, we've talked a lot about trying to crack the perfectly wretched villains a lot more. But I still think there's still a lot to crack with every character, not just necessarily the perfectly wretched guys. That just goes to show that Urthel in particular, who's in the past been marked as one of the worst characters, if not the worst character in the game by a lot or by almost everybody, there are ways around it and there are ways to be dominant with her.
Yeah. And
there are ways to win.
Yeah. And speaking on that, I want to actually throw this to Shatter Dice a little bit because so it's also kind of opened up. And actually, this is both Cincinnati and Shatter Dice because both of these players actually have taken characters that we had notions about how they should possibly play, and they took those characters and just flipped them on their heads. I want to give the floor to Shatter Dice a little bit because Shatter Dice is. Would you say you're a Maleficent main?
Yeah, I would say that.
Yeah. And
I was conflicted for a long time because I wanted to represent Gothel as well, but I feel my Maleficent is more consistent overall.
Right. And one of the things I have to give Shatter Dice a shout out for is the fact that, you know, even on the show and even for the longest time since we've had the community going, we've always kind of put Maleficent as probably one of the fastest characters, if not the fastest character in the game in terms of being incredibly aggressive. And we'll talk more about what that means later. But Shatter Dice actually came in to a little bit of a competitive game that we streamed on Twitch and took Maleficent and just flipped her on her head that we've never seen before. Do you want to talk a little bit about that, Shatter Dice?
Yeah, sure. So if you remember from the game, I was playing against Scar, and he got that early Mufasa and Zazu, which was just immediate danger if left alone. Like I don't think I really had a choice in the matter of like I had to stop him right then and there, otherwise he was gonna get out of control. Yeah, so Scar had the early Mufasa and I had to switch to a slower game plan where I'm fading him more heavily rather than progressing my own board. And it was particularly interesting because I didn't get the Raven the whole time that game, and
no,
that playstyle is a lot more difficult without the Raven, but with the Raven, it becomes very powerful because one of the issues is obviously there are only one power spots in the two fate locations. But if I have the Raven getting me power, I can fate pretty much every turn and I'm still progressing. And I think it's that adaptability that makes her good. She can very easily switch from aggressively pursuing her own objective to trying to control and secure a win like just right when she needs it rather than like just going for it repeatedly and getting pushed out.
One of the interesting things, I didn't see this from you, but our shouts to our judge for these competitive games we've been doing recently, Knickknack. I was playing some games with Knickknack and he actually likes playing Maleficent a lot. And he actually took a very similar strategy to you where he was pointing out to me, you know, when you are struggling to kind of get moving with Maleficent, because sometimes that can happen. What you literally can do is you can literally just play Vanish at a fate location and you can just stay put. There is only one card that can really kind of counter that. And that card's name is King Stefan or Stefan, however you would like to pronounce it for the sake of hilarities. But yeah. It was incredible to see that type of game. Like, it was insane. Like, we're so used to seeing Maleficent play very aggressively where, like, you just want to try to throw curses out as fast as possible. And overall, she has the most simplistic kind of goal in the game next to Prince John, where you're just basically playing a type of card to each location. But in theory, because of how her fate deck is structured, it makes it very, very, not necessarily complicated, but like you have, there's a lot more you have to work around besides just, besides just playing cards out. You gotta play a little defense.
I would say that, yeah, it, her goal is definitely simple on the surface, but of all the characters, she's probably one that I when I'm playing, I have to put the most thought into just like planning turns ahead with where I'm going to move things and constantly checking what's still available in the Fate discard. Sort of like how when you're playing Scar, you're always looking out for Hakuna Matata. I'm looking for what, all right, which curses are safe, which ones aren't. Are all the four strength heroes gone? Is Fauna still available? Is Once Upon a Dream available? And it's just it's very interesting keeping track of all that.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's the big thing I would say about Maleficent. The when I we were talking about aggressive and versus slow, and when I think of like a controlling villainous character, it's not just like fading. Fading's a part of the process to slow things down a little bit so you don't have to rush. But the big thing I think of when I think controlling is reducing the options your opponent has when fading you, and basically just slowly locking out their ability to disrupt you. And Maleficent does that really well, and that's the big thing with those curses. It's not just that they sit there and are an item, it's they specifically lock out certain things, and so when combined together you can basically make it so your opponent's fates don't do much, if anything, against you.
Oh yeah, I agree with that very much. And it also encourages them to fate in a way that you want, sort of. If they get a four strength hero and you have a Forest of Thorns, they're really going to want to discard that Forest of Thorns. So where you place it can allow you to mitigate their fates and control how they're going to affect you.
So it's funny that we're talking about, like, in such detail about all these, like, Maleficent just in particular. And I know everyone who listens to the show may not be as, you know, I don't know what the best word is, but like detailed with these strategies, because Disney Villain is on its core is a strategy game. It's marketed like that. But, you know, we play, you know, the four of us right here play at such a nitty gritty level when it comes to playing this game that I feel like I think we can all agree that's why we really like playing this game, is to play it at this type of level, if we're not all mistaken.
Yeah. I think it's very much, to me, it's a lot like Super Smash Brothers in the sense that, like, it can be played in a very very seriously. So, like, when I play against you guys, I normally always try to take it very seriously. Or if I'm playing in Wicked League or in a tournament, I go all out and I take it as seriously as possible. But on the opposite end, it's great to play, like, as, like, a family game with, like, your friends and, like, family. And those times, I have no need to be serious about it. So I feel like it's very versatile in that aspect because they've marketed it to where there are so many different villains. And, you know, I know that my favorite villain is Captain Hook, but against my, like, family, I would pull out, like, I'd be like, oh, I'm going to play Ursula today, or I'm going to play Yzma, and I'm just going to have some fun today, you know, as opposed to being like, oh, I'm going to play Hook and Queen of Hearts because those are my best characters, you know?
I think the comparing it to Super Smash Brothers was very on the nose.
Yeah.
I agree but 100%.
Yeah, because, like, at the same time that, yeah, like, this game can be built as both, there are great, not, like, advantages, but it's super cool to see it played at both levels, you know? Because when I first got the game, I never thought it would turn into this thing where I would find a community of people that all enjoyed playing it, and everyone would just wanted to start playing 1v1. When I first got it, I didn't think this game would be possible being played 1v1. I thought it was a legitimate, you had to play with three or more people. And then, you know, I started figuring out, oh, 1v1 is an actual thing. And then, like, the actual meta, or like the actual, what the meta, or like the competitive environment or the flow of the games is turning into now in a 1v1 atmosphere is very cool and very, I would say entertaining, or like very just satisfying to watch, and really just, you know, I don't know where I'm going with this.
No, it's okay. Tangents are part of the podcast, friend. I appreciate it. I do want to kind of, I'm going to let you all kind of speak individually on this. We'll actually let, I'll let you start, Brian. Is all three of you, and just to let the those of you listening to the podcast, either on podcast services around the globe or YouTube, you know, what we've started doing after our big Disney Villainous Tournament is that on Discord, we've been doing, now this is our, we've done this for 2 weeks now, where once / twice a week, we've been doing what's called the Wicket League. And right now we're in a prologue phase where we are essentially just playing competitive Disney Villainous and kind of taking some results and figuring stuff out. But in a few weeks, maybe month, we want to actually launch an official Disney Villainous League, where what is going to be is that anyone can join and players will be able to basically play competitive games that are centered around playing best 2 out of 3 against another player. And they're going to be trying to achieve wicked points. So that way they're just, it's basically like a ranking system, you know, like the more points that you get, it's based off how many matches you play, how often you win sets, that type of thing. And what we want to do though, is that by gaining those points, we want to, at the end of a quote unquote season, have players be able to compete in a tournament. Now, unlike what we did with the tournament that we hosted back in the latter half of June, we want to actually make it a little bit more like not necessarily competitive, but a little bit more put together. We are planning on, instead of having it be like a 16 or a 32 person tournament, we're going to have a top 8 tournament essentially. So the top 8 players based off wicked points will be able to compete basically for a final and like try to be the best Disney Villainous player out there. And we've noticed that after these past 2 weeks of doing this kind of Wicked League prologue stuff, that we boosted the competitive like desires of a lot of folks all over the place. Like even today we were talking about getting stuff set up for next week, and then we already had new faces jump into our competitive channel on Discord, and we're already talking about, hey, like, where can I watch, where can I play, how do I sign up, and all that stuff. And it's a real joy to see that people want to get into it at this level. And I just kind of want to let our competitors kind of talk about the competitive side, because I can tell you guys how much I love competing, because I tell people all the time, I relate my experience playing Disney Villainous to when I used to play Killer Instinct back in the day. And, you know, that story still holds true. And just seeing everything that we've seen for the past 2 weeks in the prologue games has been incredible. And I kind of want to let these folks kind of dive into why they've been really digging competitive. So I'm going to start with Brian here, and we'll kind of just cycle through. So why do you love the competitive nature of Disney Villainous, Brian?
Geez, I think it's, well, first of all, it's Disney. I think that's hilariously awesome that like this Disney game has a community in the first place. I think that's really rad. But also, I think it's mostly, so I'm getting into like playstyle now. So like, it's a really cool way that we can just see so many different things. Like, we can see so many new characters come to light. So many characters that we currently play. Like I play Captain Hook, and I've seen 6 different people at least play Captain Hook within the past month. And it's cool to see, you know, them play him differently, or the similarities between them, or like me and them, or like the differences, and see like, oh, why do you do this and why do you do that, and try to watch that and study. Also, one of my main things is that I like, this game is very cool in the sense that it can go for long, but it can also be done really quick. Like, it's all about the cards basically, and that's more so Hook's kind of thing. And another thing, like with this game, to me, it's very mentally draining. That's not necessarily like a bad thing, but it helped. It makes me think really hard, like a lot. So, and I really live for that, because sometimes, like especially during times like this, like with the pandemic, and just like life stuff, like being able to sit down and play, you know, like a stupid Disney board game, you know, with some people that you've never actually met in real life, but they're really cool. You know, it's really cool to do, because it really like takes you away from that. And yeah, I think that's really why I love competitive so much, is that it just really gives me the chance to like branch out and like test my strategies that I've been doing in the comfort of my own home against some of the other best players out there and people that take this game, not as seriously, but people that really enjoy this game as much as I do.
I do have to shout Brian out because, so we've been doing these games where, you know, on Twitch, on my Twitch channel, twitch.tv/Joker_Jonesy, all lowercase letters. I got to plug myself. But we've been hosting these games and Brian, along with another competitor, Pikmin, they've been doing a lot of commentary on these. And I know Brian gets a huge kick out of commentating. A huge kick. And for those of you who have not heard Brian's commentary, it's absolutely fantastic. Like, it's one of, especially because what I will literally do is I will just run the stream and just keep the footage going on the cards. And just hearing Brian back and forth with Pikmin about stuff is just awesome. And I think a lot of us really enjoy that. The, for once, not having not only me not narrate a game, but also hearing someone who's just as excited about the game talk about it, I think is also just really important. And I got to give Brian a shout out for that because it's really cool. And I know he enjoys it. So,
yeah, I watch a lot of esports. So,
yeah, Brian's the next shoutcaster. Yeah. All right, Cincinnatus, what makes you enjoy the competitive nature of Disney Villainous so much?
I think the best way to put it is I see it as a really intricate puzzle. I play a lot of board games. I played Magic for a while and things pretty competitively, but all of that competition, as far as I see, is just like improvement and learning the intricacies. Like, if I felt like I understood all these characters and the best ways to play them, I'd probably be done playing. I wouldn't keep doing this. There's very few I feel comfortable with, and even the ones I feel most comfortable with, like we have those match, like those league matches, and I play and I'm going back and thinking about some of the situations, and I still haven't solved all the things that can come up, and that's just fun and exciting to dig through. And even when you're not playing, like you were talking about watching the matches and just going back through and watching some of the other matches people are playing and thinking about the situations that they're in and trying to learn from maybe their play style or just the weird scenarios that come up is just really cool. So
I got to ask you, you come from a Magic the Gathering competitive background, and I know you've mentioned this many times on the server before, but when you, like, you know, I know you played Magic for a long time. Is the Disney Villainous competitive scene, like, trying to reignite that competitive spark? Do you find that this is a lot more of an enjoyable experience than playing Magic? Or do you feel like this has still some, it's still in its early ages, but it still has some, like, it has a lot of room to grow to become something really fantastic and people are sleeping on it?
I think it has room to grow to become pretty fantastic. I don't know that people are sleeping on it. It seems like a lot of people are interested, like, and it's obviously early kind of thing. So we'll leave it up in the air as to whether people will sleep on it or not. But I do think it's kind of filling that role in my life currently. I think it being something that I play with my wife, and she's super competitive too, and has helped me with a lot of things. It's different than what Magic was for me, but it's a very similar like puzzle for me to like try and master. And I think that's kind of the key, that mastery. Like when I hear people talk about competitive, it has like a connotation of winning is what matters, right? That's what competition kind of indicates. But the way I tend to approach it and the way I get the most fun out of it is that mastery. Winning and losing isn't really the important part, although winning tends to be because you've mastered something. So, you know, it is a little bit of a thing. But if I felt like I played a game as perfectly and like to the best of my ability as I could, and there was nothing more for me to learn, that would be really satisfying, even if I lost. But it's, you know, going through and as you play, thinking about some of your previous choices that you made and how that is affecting your current situation, is where I get the most out of it. Just that mastery.
I think you speak a lot of things that I relate to, because as a fighting game guy, I always think back on mistakes I made in my fighting game matches. And that's why fighting games always speak so much to me, is because you think you like a good fighting game is a fighting game that forces you to continue to grow and learn. And even when you think you've mastered a character, you've never really mastered it, because you have a whole roster of characters that have different, all like hundreds and thousands of people playing those different characters, and you just have to learn to adapt and understand what to do. And I think that is so important, and what speaks so well about the design of this game, and I've spoke on this before, is that the strongest part of this game is that there is two kind of mindsets you can walk into the game with, where, you know, you can just go play your favorite character, you know, once or twice and kind of walk away from the game and be done. Or you can really sit there and try to master the character to the highest extent and learn how to play against all the different villains in all different lights. And I think that is something that a lot of people need to remember about this game, is that, you know, and this is me, the inner teacher, make sure you do your homework, kids. But, you know, it constantly is forcing you to learn and have to do your homework, and like, all right, what can I do better? What should I try next time? What do I need to focus on when I'm playing against this particular character? And as long as that spark is still there, which, you know, I've been playing this game for over a year now and the spark hasn't died, and, you know, the spark is going to get even lit more with Marvel coming out, which we'll say that for another day, but, I just can't wait. And it invigorates me, especially watching all of you folks learn new characters. I know Brian recently picked up Queen of Hearts, and like watching Brian learn Queen of Hearts has been really fun. And like, I know you since Ness have really stepped it up with Yzma and brought Yzma to a new light. And then I know Shatter Dice has also been on this Ursula train with me a little bit. And speaking of Shatter Dice, what makes the competitive side of Disney Villainous so special to you?
I think a lot of it, I'm going to be echoing Cincinnatus's sentiments on this. It's all about that sense of self-improvement to me. I'm in almost everything I do, I'm very competitive. I've played League of Legends, like Diamond 3 ranked. I've played in Blood Bowl tournaments, just almost everything, that it's always there. And I always want to play to the best of my ability. And when I started with Disney Villainous, it was a party game, some friends, and we just played this in a group setting or whatever. And as I went, I was learning more about the characters. And then when we weren't playing, I was like looking on the wiki and stuff, and like learning about how to, because like I'd get into a match and I was like, wow, that villain seems really strong. It's like, okay, how can I use the fate deck to play against them better? And it just kept going, and I was so pleasantly surprised by how much depth there is that I did not expect the game. And then it just kept going, and I found this place, and it was great to see a bunch of people who shared that competitive nature with me and wanted to really explore the depth of the game in a way that wasn't going to happen in that sort of casual party game type element. As fun as that type of game is, and I think that, and I do love that. I think it's a great place to be as well.
I kind of find this interesting, the fact that we're relating a lot of this to Smash Brothers, and I think there is a testament to how this game is designed to be the Smash Brothers of Disney villains. You know, because Smash Brothers, in theory, like, yeah, you can play four players or eight players or whatnot, and, you know, do that, and you can play it like that and still have fun, but, you know, this whole tournament surrounded by 1v1s of Smash Brothers, and like playing Smash Brothers to like a very competitive environment. Now, granted, Smash Brothers competitive is a very different ball of wax, where like, and granted, I'm not part of the Smash community, but I know all this discussion goes on where it's like, all right, you got to pick this particular stage. You know, are we doing stock? Are we doing KO? Or what are we doing? But with Disney Villainous, it's a lot more kind of straightforward, where it's like, all right, it's your character versus my character. We are playing, you know, in this format. We're not playing with more than two players, and we're just going to have a lot of fun. And it definitely, you know, I didn't actually think of it until now, the fact that, there's a design aspect of this game where it really is meant to be the Smash Brothers. And I make this joke all the time that there was a 5 or 6 player game that we played early in the channel's life cycle, where we had Great Sam and make the famous quote of Iago saying, "We're in Smash Brothers." And that quote has a lot more meaning now, because this literally is the Smash Brothers of Disney villains. And it's great. And I love it.
Yeah, like, I think kind of going back to what Cincy was saying about Magic the Gathering, now, you know this, Joker, but I don't come from a board game background. I don't come from a trading card game background. I've been to maybe, like, 2 or 3 Smash Bros. Tournaments in my life. I've played it competitively with friends before, like serious games. But, like, most of my knowledge has just come from, like, studying and, like, watching and studying, like, the Smash Bros. Scene. Like, that's some of my favorite stuff to watch competitively. I've watched a lot of Magic the Gathering, you know, their league, as well as Pokemon TCG. And I know that, like, a lot of, you know, just kind of, like, basing off of there, like, when you see Disney Villainous, I think it compares a lot to Smash Bros, but also to things like Magic the Gathering as well, because they have decks that are literally designed around things like control, being more engine or aggressive decks, you know, with like lots of monsters or things like that. And I'm guessing like control is more so like spell heavy. I'm not too sure. Cincinnatus can correct me. But like, I feel like this Disney Villainous game really brings together those two worlds, like just smashes them, like, all together. Like, hey, here are your characters, here's like their tools, here's what they do. We're not creating decks, we're given decks, and we have to decide, okay, how are we going to play this, you know? Because I think I can take it here. I'm looking at those poll results that you posted, from the aggression, control, and engine, poll. Ursula, yeah, for aggression, 17 people put 1, least aggressive. She doesn't have to worry about being aggressive. Now, you, Jonesy, are the most aggressive player I know when it comes to vanquishing things, and you make it work a lot with Ursula.
And to kind of go a little bit what Brian's talking about right now for those of you listening, so on the Discord channel, I've been wanting to do this for a while, where we kind of finally put the characters into different play styles, or like parts of their game that really makes them stand out, or really, really effectively as a community, how we think these characters should be played. So what I did was I put together a Google form where the players basically rated each character, you know, 1 to 5 in these 3 categories. So it'd be aggression, engine, and control. And to kind of give you some context of what that means, aggression means that you are moving fast towards your goal and you're definitely like defeating a lot of stuff. That is usually kind of how you have to progress, because usually the heroes are made to slow you down in a significant way. Control is more of these characters play a lot slower of a game, and their heroes kind of like, you also like, they're a lot more passive. They do a lot more negative, like, lingering effects. So the thing is, you want to try to get rid of those characters, so that way their effects won't linger. But sometimes control characters don't necessarily have the tools to do that. So that's why we have characters like Ursula that exist. And then we have engine characters, where engine characters are characters that have to build up a lot to start moving forward. And sometimes they could be a little bit more control and aggressive, but they have to play a lot of cards out on the board to start getting other cards working in cohangent with each other, or cotangent. Words are hard. But that's kind of what we delved into there. And I personally have always been an aggressive player. When I play my fighting games, I play what is called a rushdown character, which these are characters are super like up in your face, always kind of mashing buttons and stuff. I've always been that type of player and always want to get in your face. But then the control aspect in the fighting game essence is more like the zoner, where they're trying to control the pace of the match. They're trying to control the speed. They're trying to make it flow in their favor rather than the opponent's, regardless of that opponent wants to really get in their face. So why don't we go ahead and dive a little bit into the play styles a little bit in terms of the competitiveness. You know, Brian, you were saying I play an aggressive Ursula. I know you are also a very aggressive player. Do you agree with that statement?
Yeah, most definitely.
Most definitely. Why do you think that is?
Well, I mean, typically, like, I mean, the cool thing with me and like with Captain Hook is something that I've learned is that he can kind of do a little bit of all three. Maybe not engine as much, but definitely control and aggression. Like the cards in his deck, for example, like, you know, like to give them the scares and the worthy opponents and the obsessions, like those all mitigate his fate deck. You know, those are all things that he is doing on his own to flush out cards either out of the fate deck or ensure that something that's about to come out is not going to hurt him so badly. And I think it was you, Shattered Ice, that reached out to me about playing Give Them a Scare, or someone reached out to me about playing Give Them a Scare after Peter was out. Like something as simple as that to like really just focus on, okay, like what's up, like what am I expecting here, or how can I prepare for this and stuff like that. But typically I try to play very aggressive or, you know, a little bit more control because I like games to really, I'm selfish in the way I like games to run in my favor, and I try to always be in control or really intimidate my opponent to where either my board is really clear or I'm discarding a lot as Hook, or I got a bunch of allies on the board and items and things like that. So that way they're fading me even more before Peter is out. So that way I can just catch him in that.
Yeah. I
don't know if that answered your question.
Yeah, it does. Since okay. It has, go ahead and go.
I hope I'm not speaking for you, Brian, but the way I've seen you play Hook has actually like really convinced me of his the more controlling style. So I think to dig into it a little bit, I think because we're kind of using terms that don't fit Disney Villainous very well, like control. So the only real ways to interact with your opponent is the fate deck, right? And so your fate deck doesn't really control what your opponent's doing. It doesn't, it's a way to slow them down, but mostly it's an obstacle and not as much about like, you're never going to completely stop them with the fate deck, which is what control in a lot of other games tends to end up being, is about winning through attrition and eventually your opponent just can't win, so you win by default kind of thing. In Villainous, control feels like it's more about making it so that fate deck doesn't disrupt you as much and kind of slowing the game down so that you can set up these barriers where the fate deck won't screw you up. And I've seen Brian with using his cards after Peter Pan's come out to manipulate his fate deck, and with the way he'll set up kind of like almost a vanquish engine to make it so that any hero that comes out isn't going to really slow him down very much. And maybe that means you defeat Peter a little bit slower, but it means you're much more certain to win. It's weird because it feels very aggressive to be defeating heroes all the time, right? But at the same time, like, it's that slow constriction of your opponent's options when they're fading you that I always feel like leads to control. So when you talk about someone like Ursula, she gets really disrupted if you just play out the crown of their trident super early without like locking them away or something. And so she kind of almost is forced into a very controlling play style because even if you're always defeating heroes, it's kind of about thinking about mitigating that fate deck and how it's going to hurt you by changing form at the right times. And then almost a quick combo of play both items, set them up so that, you know, even if someone like Ariel comes out, it's not going to be that badly. I can attest to this
as someone who's playing a lot of Ursula recently, where it's very much like, all right, I need to... I've been telling people that Ursula is a very adaptive character where, like, she has the tool, like, her whole deck is essentially focused around vanquishing stuff. Like, there are very, like the crown and is like the only card in theory that really isn't focused around vanquishing. Even if you want to think about it, is that when you activate it, you get to maybe discard a hero, so you consider that vanquishing. But she has the most vanquishing centric deck of everything. Even more so than Scar, because every single card is focused around, all right, am I using these tools to set heroes up to be vanquished? And it's different, but you almost have to make sure at all times you have the tools to take care of that, because unlike most other characters, she just has two cards she needs to play. One of them she has to definitely position, and after that, she's done. She doesn't really require anything else, like, absolutely at all. But since she's always limited to three locations at a time, she definitely has to control her board at all times to ensure that she wins.
Those actions are way too important to stay covered.
Yeah. No, so. I make the joke all the time, but I know everyone in here can attest to this. Options. They are so important. They're so important. Anyway, Shatter Dice. I know you have a very interesting thing on this playstyle stuff, because especially coming from someone who basically flipped the mindset of Maleficent to a lot of folks. How do you take all the playstyle stuff here?
So I tend to think of playstyles in a rather different way than the terminology you're putting here. I focus mostly on aggression, aggro, and control, borrowed heavily from Magic Gathering. I also take another source of inspirations with this, and that's from StarCraft, the real-time strategy game. But first I'll go into, I guess, the Magic inspiration of aggressive, aggro, and control. To me, I consider aggro to be you're pushing towards a win condition, right? And I don't necessarily relate how much you are vanquishing heroes to this or any of that. It's just how quickly are you going to win condition, and in particular on your board. So I consider this a focus on your own board, whereas control is more of a focus on the opponent's board or making it so that they can't, like, stop your board. So where in Magic Gathering, like, aggression would be iconic to like a red deck, where they'll play out a bunch of low cost cards and swarm the opponent before they have a chance to react. Control would be defined by more of like the blue style, where you play out your things and then you pick and choose like particular things and you counter them. So you don't let them play the cards that would really mess you up, because you're controlling them. In this case, and now my favorite type of deck in Magic is the combination of the two. It's red and blue, where it's aggro control. And that, I feel, is most prevalent in Maleficent in particular. Where
I was about to say.
Mm-hmm,
yeah.
Where you are controlling them in that you are going to mitigate the effects of any incoming fates on you. And that's why I do the things where I'm stacking the curses, where I'm trying to make it so that as many fates that are possible at this moment will not affect me or set me back or mitigate it at the least. And then using that to aggressively push so that while they can't stop me. The StarCraft inspiration comes from sort of, in StarCraft, there's a sort of economy of your attention, where you can only pay attention to so many things at one time. And they split that between macro management and micromanagement. In macro, you're focusing on your buildings. You're making sure that whenever... Actually, no, I'm going to go into micro first. Micro would be you're sending your troops over to go fight the enemy, and you're going to micromanage them, and you're going to try and make sure they're as efficient as possible, and you're putting your focus on that. Whereas macro would be, you're focused at, on your base, and you might not be as efficient with your troops, but you're making sure that there's more to replace them. So, and I think the sort of same thing goes here, where you can focus on your own board, or you can focus on the opponent's board.
I got you. That makes a lot of sense. I've always kind of said that, now I'm not a StarCraft player, but I have played Civilization, Age of Empires, and that mindset mainly goes more towards Age of Empires, I would say, than Civilization. But this is in a weird sense a Civilization game, where you literally have your own little faction, quote unquote, and you have your own like set of allies and tools that you can use to go against the opponent, and the different realms are kind of set up to allow you to do those types of things. And that I've always strongly tried to relate this as much as possible to Civilization style games, especially this is definitely boosted with Marvel coming out, where Marvel definitely feels like a Civilization style game. Like there will still be like a 1v1 type of game, but like with Disney Villainous, like in some, I saw this on Board Game Geek, where someone was basically saying like this is like competitive solitaire, you know, where like you have your own thing. The only way your opponent can really interact with your board is by fading. But with Marvel, with being able to move your allies and having this universal fate deck that's not necessarily targeted towards you, I think that game is definitely geared towards more of a Civilization style. And I think the way that you described that was a very, very good way of describing even the Disney villains, like how they operate. Because I've always kind of made that relation when I try to explain this game to people, is it's like a weird Disney like Civilization style game, but you're all doing your own thing. But I mean, to a lot of people, that makes sense. Like, you know, I mentioned my dad way too much on this show. And the way I actually tried to explain this game to him the first time was like, you like playing Civilization, don't you? And he's like, yeah. I'm like, well, think of the Disney character as the Civilization. And that made it a lot easier to teach, let me tell you.
I can see that, yeah.
Yeah.
Cincinnatus, I don't want to skip you over, because I know you actually mentioned stuff with Brian's thought process. But when it comes to all the playstyle stuff, like what are your thoughts? I feel like you are definitely, based off the characters that you've played, I feel like you're very control-esque, but I also could be wrong. You want to dive a little bit into that really fast?
I tend to lean that way, I think. So to kind of bounce off Shattered Ice, I'm just going to bounce off the other two
Do
people. His description, I agree very much with the fact that talking about these styles based on control or based on like fading or vanquishing can lead us to a really awkward definition, because every character has to vanquish or has to fade. It's more about, and this kind of goes back into that like competitive solitaire thing, right? It's not really competitive solitaire, because you have an opponent who's going to interact with you, but it's only through that one avenue. I tend to like the more controlling characters, and that's what led me to Yzma, and it leads to like my enjoyment of Maleficent and things. And it's just like those cutting off those avenues for your opponent to interact with you. You know, in Yzma's case, you're making each one of her fate piles less effective against you. And in Maleficent's case, it's placing curses so that they're restricted as to how they place those things. And that's just, I always find that really interesting, and the puzzle to be really appealing. That isn't to say the aggressive characters aren't, you know, my thing too. I know Scar is kind of forced into always pursuing his goal, because if he tries to mitigate his fate deck, he'll get punished really hard. But that's also fun, and it's a good change of pace. But yeah, I do definitely tend to lean towards that more controlling play style of eliminating options for my opponent.
So before we leave this playstyle topic here, we can kind of lead this into kind of the last little bit of the segment of the show that I want to get into. A little bit of kind of a, I don't want to necessarily call it a tier list update, but with the, and Brian kind of alluded to this earlier a little bit, with the different playstyles sheet that we put together, there are some interesting factoids I kind of want us to throw out there. Now, I want everyone to know listening, as well as those of us on the podcast right now, this is not like the definitive, like, yes, this is exactly how it like we see these characters and such, but I do think there's some interesting results. And to let you folks know too, this was not like a small sampling. We had in total 40 people on this forum, which is a lot of people for how many people we have active on this community, which is really nice. But the aggression, we'll talk about the most aggressive character based on the community. I'll do the top three. We have Scar. Just because. Dr. Vasilier.
He's the most aggressive.
I agree. But the community believes that Dr. Vasilier is the most aggressive. Then we have a tie between Evil Queen and Scar, and then Captain Hook.
Interesting.
I think we can all agree that's a pretty, you can probably switch those around. I would still say Scar is probably the most aggressive that he needs to be, but I think those are probably the most aggressive towards like vanquishing and also just trying to really pursue their goal as fast as possible. We have any comments on that?
I think three of those, the three best characters, if you want to get into it, have a lot of variety in the way they can be played. Hook, Doctor, and Evil Queen. But they're all definitely capable of being the most aggressive character.
I think it's particularly true for Evil Queen and Hook due to their lock locations. So if they're not being aggressive, they are just going to have, they have one less location. So they have to.
Yeah. Like typically with, like with Evil Queen, like it seems a little bit more obvious to be a lot more aggressive than Hook, I think, because she doesn't have a lot of cards that can really stop her as much, because she can gain poison like crazy if she wants. But like with Hook, like if I feel like he's really versatile in the sense that if you're able to try to do both at the same, like two of them at the same time, then you're in a good spot. Because if you're just trying to find the map on its own and you're not playing allies before you try to find the map, then like you're going to leave yourself in a pretty weird, bad position. So you have to be able to do, like, you have to be able to bring like both ideas together. And whenever you do that, you can really help yourself out a whole lot. Cause if you're able to, it's not more so. Cause when I learned the character, it was like, okay, number one, find the map. Number two, find Peter. Number three, move him to the Jolly Roger. Number four, play out the allies and defeat him. It's like, okay, but that sounds like a really long process. How can I do all of these? How can I do all of that at the same time? You know, to limit, you know, like 60 minutes of like doing it in that specific order, because typically that's not always what you should, you know.
It's not always what you should do. It's not always what's given to you at the same time.
Yeah, exactly. Like you have to be prepared for everything, because if you're playing, once you shuffle that deck, the map could be at the very bottom. Peter could be at the very bottom, you know? So like you have to be ready for both. And in that instance, you're not going to know where the map is until you're 20 cards deep in the deck.
Right.
You know,
which is also a sad day sometimes for Hook.
Yeah. I've learned. You don't have the option to search through your deck. You don't have the option to flip it over or something. You don't get like a...
Yeah. You know,
you basically, you just shuffle and go. And you have to make decisions based off of like everything in your hand. And I think that can be said for all the characters as well, though.
I can definitely attest that for Ursula for sure. Yeah. 100%. Now, from aggression, we're going to go to Engine. Now, Engine, I think, might be a little skewed, and this might just be me personally. I'm going to give you guys the top three, but there is a tie for the top. Now, but like I said, if we all disagree on this, we could just move forward with this one, but I think I have a few things to say. Our top one is a tie between Jafar and Mother Gothel. We then have Ursula, and then we have Yzma in that order from top, the top three. How we feel about this? Because I personally only agree with one of these.
Gothel.
Yeah, that's the only Gothel. One.
I actually do agree with Jafar being engine heavy, but no one is more engine heavy than Prince John.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Prince John was put at the very, not at the very bottom, but very close to the bottom. I don't know if maybe people got that skewed. I do agree with Mother Gothel and Jafar being in the top entourage of characters, because those characters definitely rely on cards being out to kind of get things going. Ursula doesn't really make any sense because there's really only four cards, and you can't really effectively rely on them because they all have one activate action that can be used. And
Yzma even less.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, like, Yzma, like, the only engine thing I know, and we've talked about this in Cincinnati, is that Yzma kind of has is the fact that with the cruel irony where if you're at an ally's location, you can play it to play an effect again. But
yep.
There's only, what, two copies of that in a deck, so you can't really engine that, per se.
Yeah, it's not really an engine as much as just a very specific effect. Like, you need a very specific scenario for it to be good. But, like, it's not really, like, something you set up because it forces you to go to specific locations. It's not, like, helping you progress constantly. The only thing in that deck that really does that is Kronk. And that's just, like, because he just stays there forever. He's kind of a vanquish engine, but, like, even that, like, it's really minimal as opposed to other allies. It just basically saves you some power.
Yeah. I do want to pounce off of what we did mention, is that Prince John is probably the most engine heavy of all the characters, and kind of why. Yeah. And I think I can speak for all of us here, but the reason why is because Prince John just needs to play so many cards out to get something going to make it so literally cannot be faded, or else the fading will go, like, help him progress towards his goal. He has tools to basically, when he vanquishes, to go towards his goal and not burn the stuff that's out there. Once he sets those cards up, it's just a ticking time bomb for when he's going to win. And I think he's the only character really in the entire game that can really do that.
Yeah.
There's really no other character.
Yeah, for me, he feels like one of those guys that has to set up and then has to have those fade actions ready late game. Because, like, one of my big things is that with Prince John, like, I lost, like, two or three straight games to Pikmin's Prince John against my hook. And that was the day that I was like, I need to find another character. And I remember messaging you and being like, Queen of Hearts, like, let's just pull her out. Let's just do it. And then I started winning games as hook against Prince John, with Shattered Ice and Purple Potato just here on the Wicked League. One of my main things is that if you try, like, you have to try to just slow him down, like, get him to where he can't, if he gets the engine going, he's not going to be able to slow you down as well, because if you're able to go fast, like, while he's getting the engine building up, and then once he's ready to fire away, if he's not able to slow you down at all, I think you're in a good position.
No, I agree. Because what's interesting about Prince John's Fate deck is that, and we're talking about this engine stuff, like, it's not just the villain doing the engine. It's also the Fate deck that's also the engine, because there's lots of cards in this game with all sorts of villains that require, like, a hero or an item out in order to make them the different cards effective. Like, some perfect examples are, like, with Scar. Like, Timon is a 2-strength hero, but when Pumbaa's out, he becomes a 4-strength, and then Pumbaa goes from a 3 to a 5. And then there's also things like, you know, the different items that give heroes more strength, so they're harder for them to be taken down. And then there's, in Prince John's case, he has cards called Steal from the Rich, where you're going to basically take away Prince John's money, and then he has to spend to get that money back. And the goal with that is to make it so Prince John has to spend more than he is gaining back to slow him down in that instance. And I think that's a whole other topic for a whole other show about Fate deck or play styles. But that just goes to show, like, there's all sorts of things that can be done with these Fate decks. So,
and And that's kind of like another funny thing that you just bring that up just now, because I feel like half or more than half of the competitive mindset is also just knowing you have to know the other player. Like, you have to know the other villain on the opposing end. You almost have to know what's coming, what's available, to keep that in mind as well. Because if you're just playing your own game, you could get crushed.
Right. If you only fade two or three times and then your opponent is about to win and you're like, oh crap, I don't know what's there to help. You know, it's like, you do definitely need to know, because there have been plenty of games where I've counted cards, and I know Brian's counted cards when we played together, and just like, all right, what is left? What is the risk I need to take? I mean, there was a Scar Hook game that we played where literally there were six cards left in the Fate deck. And I was like, all right, 50% chance that Hakuna Matata is going to get pulled. I just got to hope and pray, you know? But I mean, sometimes that's what you got to know how to do. Last play style. And then we're going to talk about averages, and then we'll go ahead and kind of finish out the show here. So control, the top three controls. We also have another first place tie. Cruella DeVille and Radagon are tied for first, Prince John for second, and Mother Gothel for third. How do we feel? I actually feel like this is a pretty decent, you know, consensus. I would say probably Cruella is probably at the top, and Prince John would also probably be up there. I don't know if Radagon should be up as high, but, you know, what do you guys think on that?
Yeah, I think I definitely agree with Cruella. I don't really agree with Radagon. He's very all-rounded.
We'll get to that. But yeah, I think these characters are all in really good spots for the control. Radagon does have a little bit of control, but that's very, very, very minor, and a little bit on depends on how you actually play the character as well. So, but we didn't see Yzma up here, Cincinnatus. Yzma's actually almost close to the bottom. Do you think there's a reason for that, or do you think that's just people's not understanding of the character yet?
I don't know. It's possible. It's not understanding. Like, control's kind of not intuitive in this game. I think it's possible. It's a little bit that. I think it's possible. It's a little bit playstyle. I don't think a lot of people like to be so methodical with Yzma. I think the fact that Radagon's so high up is kind of an indicator of that same thing. Like, he's a little bit controlling with capture and stuff, but like, the way I see control, I don't know that I see him this high. And I see someone like Maleficent much higher. So.
Yeah, no, I was gonna say Maleficent is actually at the very bottom of the control list.
Which, yeah,
I disagree with that. Yep.
Yeah, it's actually pretty funny, like, when you think about it, because a lot of the game could be just designed on how the cards are just set up. Because I don't think the decks themselves are built around these ideals. I think it's really just what's presented to you at the time, that a lot of the villains could just say, hey, I'm going to go aggressive here. I'm going to go more control here. You know, like, yesterday I had a Hook game that finished in literally 7 minutes. It was a 7-minute game, and I couldn't believe how fast it went. But that was just because the cards presented at the time were like, okay, it's just time to be extremely aggressive and just go for it, you know? And then on the other, and on the opposite spectrum, you know, since you, like, your Yzma play is very, in the sense that you really try to control the entire, you not only control your decks, but you control just the entire, you try to control the pace of the game with smashing all the decks and then just going in and finding, trying to get Cusco, like, later, you know, as opposed to being like, okay, I'm just going to find him right now and then Hail Mary it, you know, kind of on the end of the spectrum, where when Maleficent was first introduced, it was like, oh my gosh, you could win in like 4 turns. But if you try that, you could get derailed really fast, and then all your hopes and dreams crash.
I do have to say, I don't think I've seen anyone go to Pacha's house as much as Cincinnatus has.
Yeah.
That is something I don't think I've ever seen. And as Cincinnatus said, it's very controlling style, because part of it too is also being able to fit your opponent and, like, try to find what you're looking for. And Pacha's house in theory is not a great location for Yzma, but the fact it's the other Fate spot is telling. So
yeah,
gotta give you shout outs for that. Give that space some love.
It's so bad, but like Fate, play a card, gain a power is fine.
It's fine. Yeah.
And discard too, right?
No, that's the meat hut. That's why the meat hut's so good.
Oh, Pacha's. Okay. I thought we were talking about.
No, meat hut is also great though. Meat hut is also fantastic.
Meat hut's actually good. In my
Meat hut is actually a good place to go.
It is my favorite combination of actions. The one power, discard, play a card, and Fate.
Same. Yeah. And that, a lot of villains have that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They do. It's like, although they are structured differently though. They're like the actions are in different spots.
Yeah.
Which is interesting.
As evidenced by someone like Scar's layout with that.
Yeah, right.
I hate that spot so much. You guys have no idea how much I hate the Savannah. I hate how that is set up. I do.
Play a card, discard on top. Wait, no, play a card, Fate on top.
Ooh, it makes me cry. Play a card
on top is rough. Yeah.
It makes me cry. The last thing I want to talk about with this, which I think is really interesting. So I did put an average. So what this does is that it averages the three values of each of the characters together. And I want to talk about some interesting things. The top three averages. And I think this does say a lot for the power of these characters too. Radagon is at top. Captain Hook is second. Evil Queen is third.
And by average, you mean just like they all kind of meddle?
Yeah, so like taking aggressive engine control values and just doing the averages of them. I've been speaking to this a lot lately that I feel the best characters in this game are the ones that are the most balanced in terms of just like everything that they can do. Now, like I said, I fully know that some of these values are very skewed. Just because some people's understandings of maybe how these characters should be played may be wrong, or it's a playstyle, you know, decision type of ordeal. But it kind of goes to show that, you know, we've talked about how in the past Evil Queen was the best character in the game. Right now, I think we all can agree that Captain Hook is probably overall the best character in the game. But I know recently too, there's been a little bit of and granted, this has been ever since Evil Comes Prepared came out, that Radagon's also fantastic. Yes. He is the greatest criminal mind after all. But
did you just pay attention to the league matches and the tournament matches? He showed up a lot and he has won a lot.
Yeah, he has.
I was gonna say, I think the only time that he lost was when Pikmin was forced to play with Rat in the final game of Grand Finals. I think every time we've seen Radagon during the league, he has not lost.
I've beaten Radagon twice with Yzma in the tournament in the league on stream. I was both against Lark, but I've also lost to him with Yzma. So.
Oh, that's right. You did. That is correct. You did lose against it. You did beat Lark, because Lark is our native Radagon player. I also love playing me some Rat, but I haven't been playing him as much recently.
To be fair, the first win was cheap. He faded me and made a silly mistake. He just like chose a pile before he looked at how many cards there were, I think, and he flipped over Kuzco. So.
Oh, God.
Oh, no.
Yeah, but, like, it happens.
Yeah. Do you guys think this is a good representation of our best, of the best villains? Or do you think there's some ones that are missing?
The Doctor's the one that I would note is missing. Three are all awesome.
Yeah. To me, Dr. Facilier is one that's definitely missing. Whenever I play against him, I feel like my brain like has to work at like a million miles an hour to make sure that I'm not doing things and to make sure that I'm focusing on what he's playing and what he's discarding, especially as Captain Hook, or a character that really has to depend on finding things. Like characters like that against the Doctor, you have to really focus hard on like, what am I, you know, like where is he, what is he doing, what's going on, you know?
Yeah,
right.
Playing against the Doctor is very much about playing where he's at. So like how you Fate him depends a lot on what part of his game he's in. Like blocking actions early is really important, but the moment he he reaches a certain point of completing his goals, and he no longer really cares about his action economy, and you have to like pile into that fortune pile. And same thing with his conditions. Like both of them are not very good early, but if you activate them late at the wrong time, you can give him so much benefit. It's crazy.
I know Brian has trained his brain playing against my Scar not to discard two or more cards, and I know that has probably helped him in more Dr. Vasilier matches than he can ever imagine.
Yeah. Literally, I've told Jonesy that the entire matchup is literally I just focus on desperation, like almost the entire time. Like in my head, that's all I'm thinking about is desperation, desperation, desperation.
Yeah, you can ignore it early, but the moment it becomes about that fortune pile, you have to pay attention to it all the time.
Yeah.
Shatter Dice, is there anyone you think that's missing from the top here?
No mention of Queen of Hearts.
Yeah. I agree.
I still feel that I know that me and you, Shattered Eyes, talked about this, but Queen of Hearts, it feels like a lot of players might be a little bit intimidated by her because her realm is so weird. And definitely, the fact that she doesn't really have a lot of allies or things in her deck that can vanquish the really strong heroes is that you really have to make a use of shrinking them. Like you have to do that. And you have to know, like, okay, I'm going to shrink this hero because I don't want to use my card guards on it, or I don't want to use, you know, I don't want to pull out the Tweedle brothers and put all the the buffs on them.
I think a big thing with this is I wouldn't expect Queen of Hearts to be a high averager because that I too. Think she doesn't fit some of these categories very well. But no. I think she is one of the better characters, if that makes sense. Like, she's one of the few characters that's good without being super balanced.
Right. She's kind of like, she's not busted, but because she's so weird, the weirdness kind of accelerates some of the, like, when you play against Queen of Hearts, you have to think on a completely different spectrum. And when you play with her, you have to think on a completely different spectrum just because... Yeah, one of her weaknesses is the fact that she can't really, like, she can't defeat heroes because one of the main cards in her deck is used to accomplish for her goal. But at the same time, it's like she has all these other odd tools that, you know, all of a sudden you're like, oh, wow, Queen of Hearts is 16 power. And you're like, why? You know, yeah. Or, oh, all of a sudden, why does Queen of Hearts have a bunch of actions open with heroes tilted on their side? You know, or... there's just so much jank stuff with her, but it all just kind of works, and it is really good. And if I know anything from playing jank fighting games, it's jank wins usually.
Yeah, and it's funny with her as well because, like, for me at least, Hook is incredibly discard heavy and like play heavy. Like, oh my gosh, I have to play cards, I have to discard stuff to find things. With Queen of Hearts, it almost feels like the opposite because you really want to keep on to like a lot of her cards in case things come out, like low strength heroes that you want to get rid of with off of your head, or the big heroes like Cheshire Cat and Alice, and you want to shrink them. You know, like, you have to be able to know, like, I need these cards in my hand for when this situation comes up because I could be biting a bullet if I get rid of it. You know?
Yeah, no, I agree.
Like with her, that character, I really think ahead for. I really have to focus on thinking past my turn, like, past a bunch of turns, like, okay, like, I'm going to put out the stopwatch. Yeah, it's going to waste me an activate action to activate a card guard, but maybe I can get, like, a by order of the queen and use that as my play action to activate card guards and then activate the stopwatch at the same time, you know?
I think right. She's funnily, like, the opposite of Dr. Facilier with her conditions, where your opponent really has to focus on the doctor's conditions. The Queen of Hearts really has to focus on whether your opponent will trigger your conditions, because like Brian was saying, yeah, the shrinking and stuff, like if you think your opponent will trigger it so you can shrink, I mean, it's so valuable to just hold on to and shrink to
and
stuff like
yeah,
that.
Yeah. hold on to Fury. I hold on to that card for like three turns. I'll stick to it.
I was going to say, Brian was playing Queen of Hearts against me one day, and he pulled out Fury, and I was like, oh my god, that card is incredibly good. Like, it is so good. Like, especially when, like, towards the end game, usually Queen of Hearts gets a little swarmed, and whoa. Like, that card comes in really good handy in a pinch.
You can't even stack heroes onto the location anymore.
No, you can't! Hero stacking? What? God.
But then again, if you shrunk a hero at a stacked hero location, would that action would still be available technically, right?
That's correct.
Yeah. That correct. So like that's why that card is so good. It's because of like the pecking order or like the idea behind that the shrunken heroes take priority.
They took some thought into how that should have worked.
And plus, when you think about that, it really makes the other player makes you larger. And really cards like that, maybe even like the effects too, like Momrath's, like as opposed to playing out a hero, like, you know, if you get like a hero and a Momrath's, like maybe you should just go for a Momrath's in hopes that you'll get an Alice or in hopes that you get something like her, or it makes you larger to really just oversize one of the heroes. So that way when I play makes you smaller, all it does is turns the hero back to normal and I'm not really getting much of anything out of it, as opposed to when I shrink a hero, I get so much more out of it,
right? Yeah, because I think the funny thing about the way her realm is set up is that because it's so janky and weird, when you shrink, I forget the one that's got like the vanquish action at it.
Told you would
is such an odd location, but the fact that you can shrink the hero that's on top of it because that's where the fate location is and still make it useful to you is really good. And like you have the choice of what gets covered up in that case, and that's to say for anything. So based off the situation, there's usually like, I would say like there's always one action at each one of those locations you should probably keep open if you can, depending on the circumstance.
Yeah, because those top actions are the fate and play a card. Typically I'd go for fate, but in certain situations I might go for play a card. But mostly fate, probably, just so that way I have the extra. I can have two spots where I fate.
You've said in the past that a location, even if it's just fate and discard, like you still value it.
Oh yeah, most definitely, and like especially, you know, with Hook on his own, the fact that he has cards that grant him extra actions, it's normally where I put those cards is at Skull Rock. I'll put like a Hook's Case there so I can gain an extra power, and then fate. And discard if that's all I can do. But yeah, typically stuff like that too, like in the competitive meta, you really have to focus on like the locations that people think aren't as good. You have to find a way to make those good because you're going to have to go there eventually. You know, you're going to have to go to the Told You Woods and the White Rabbit's House and Hangman's Tree. Or like like in Pacha's house, you know, where you can't discard. You have to find a way, like, how am I gonna go here and make this worth my while so I'm not just gonna go there and fate the opponent and then halt my progress, you know?
Right. Like, no, that's what I tell people at Scar all the time is that the gorge is the only location with the fate action at the bottom. But the problem is if that place gets covered up, it's only vanquish and fate, and especially if that's done early. And I want to try to keep doing stuff, like that's really bad for me because I want to be able to move something and maybe try to do a little combo kill or play a card that helps me do that. And it's like, wow, if I need to go over there, fate too, maybe in the late game and that gets covered, it's really rough. So,
That gets into the playing ahead, like planning ahead, the timing when you're going to go to those bad locations, like no location's super bad, but like timing when you're going to go to those locations that aren't as useful so that you get the most out of them.
Right. It's just absolutely huge. Absolutely. Sometimes like you might know a hero is going to cover up a location, but you might go to that location just to take all the actions there, knowing that that's going to get covered up. So maybe if you need to take the action a second time, you can do that too. I've had that. I was playing actually Jafar today and I was in a position where I was like, I know this place is going to get covered up next turn, but I'm going to actually sit here and fate. So if I need to fate twice in a row, I can get the most out of that, even though that's not the best thing for me to do right now. So that happens a lot. So timing is everything. But all right, last thing before we end the show here, guys. And I'm just curious what your guys' all thoughts are. Now, we're not doing tier lists. Who do you think the one character, what is the character you think is the best in the game? Let's start with it. Shattered Ice, I want to start with you. Who do you think is the best character in the game?
I think it's Facilier.
Okay.
Me too.
Brian?
Facilier.
Cincinnatus.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. I think Hook's really good, but Facilier, I think, is the most balanced character and the most, like, unstoppable kind of thing.
Huh.
Like, I could go into it a little bit if you want me to for a second.
No, yeah, I'm okay with going into it for a little bit here, because all three of you said the same thing, so I'm just curious.
So, the doctor doesn't have to dig through his fate deck to find a specific hero to defeat, which is kind of an issue that Evil Queen and Hook can run into, where you fate yourself to accomplish your goal, and it can clog up what you're doing. And at the same time, his goal is super linear. So you can go towards it. And if you're in a bad spot, just rush it kind of thing. But also he can set up these engines with the cane and the illusion powder, which just kind of make him feel unstoppable once he gets them going. You know, he can vanquish every turn if he has the cane at the parade. And the other big thing is the different phases of the game that he kind of falls into, where you want to play heroes to slow him down, but you also need to eventually deal with his fortune pile, means that as Facilier, you can kind of control the pace of the game as you wish. If your opponent's messing up your fortune pile a ton, you're going to have extra actions. You can, keep just churning and setting up your engine so that you can get to that unstoppable state. And yet, if your opponent's dumping heroes, like, just power through to get to your goal, and your fortune pile is going to be mostly empty. So I think all those things combined just make him really versatile, really powerful.
Huh. Shatterdice, do you attest to a lot of this?
I think he's really versatile. In the same way that Maleficent can shift easily between aggro and control, Dr. Facilier's same way, only like everyone's seen those games where he just gets Rule New Orleans Talisman like within the first couple turns, plays him out, and then cards will tell and he wins. But he doesn't struggle with a long game either. Like, he can very efficiently fish through his deck to get the cards he needs. He has a ton of good, very efficient allies to be keeping his board clear and vanquishing. His vanquished location has to play a card at the bottom, and then it's also a fate location. So if you attempt to clog up his board, he is going to fate you back even harder because of it in the process of clearing his board. And he's just really good, especially when you get more comfortable with them and you don't get slowed down as much by people's attempts at fading you.
Interesting.
I also just think he gets the most free wins, if that makes sense. Like,
yeah.
So even when the game is going horribly, you don't have anything going for you. He has a fortune pile that's like 10 cards, 20 cards, right? And the talisman's gotten taken from you. You vanquish, you go to the fact that the vanquish location is at the place he has to play the cards will tell. You vanquish the person or the hero with a talisman. You play the cards will tell. And if you get lucky, you can just win anyway. Like, even if everything went horribly. And that's just a really powerful aspect to have. It's obviously not what you want to rely on, but the fact that that's in your back pocket and it's really powerful is just really, it's a good combo.
Yeah, to me, it just feels like when I play Dr. Facilier, it feels like a chore. or not Facilier, Facilier, sorry. Whenever I play against Dr. Facilier, it feels like a chore. Like, it feels like a, okay, I really have to, like, now I have to, like, focus, like, extremely hard on, like, what's going on. Normally, I try to, my dream scenario is if I can get a mass spirit in the fortune pile when it's low. So if it's at, like, 3 cards or 4 cards and there's a mass spirit, and there's one mass spirit in there, I'll just leave it there and then not fade him again to add more cards into the fortune pile. I'll fade him again to add heroes, but I normally won't be adding more cards into the fortune pile unless I find like more mass spirits to throw in, because the more card, like just like you were saying, Cincy, the more cards that you add in, he still has that major luck factor in his back pocket that can just cause him to win immediately. With having the luxury of the play a card in the Vanquish at the Voodoo Emporium, he can just do it whenever he wants. So it's the idea behind, you need to be able to force him to fish out that mass spirits with a Cards Will Tell and try to get the cane out of there. Either get the cane out of there or keep the player card action at the parade covered at the same time. So that way he doesn't get the luxury of playing two of them, getting rid of the mass spirit, and then playing it again to win the game. It's kind of like you have to keep that mindset in your head as much as you can, because that card desperation can really come in clutch form. And if you do, it's so easy to just discard 2 cards and forget about it. I've done it so many times, and I've had to tell myself, like, just stop discarding 2 cards. Like, if that's going to be a major win for him, you don't want that to happen. Yeah, it might slow me down a little bit, but it's helping, you know? And go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, finish your thought. I'm sorry.
Yeah, like, I don't know, like, just, and on top of what you were saying about he's good in all, he's good early game, mid game, and late game. There's never really a time where he gets, there's not a point in the game where it feels like he's hurting, necessarily. You know, if he's vanquishing everything, if he's playing Vanquish heavy and is controlling the board, there's never really a time where he's not comfortable.
Yeah. I think. And we're giving him a lot of love right now with all three of us picking him, but I do think the margin from him to the next character or whatever, like, just because I would put him on top, I don't think he like stands out so much from someone like Hook or Evil Queen.
Yeah.
Agreed.
It's like running away or anything.
Yeah, but at the same time, this whole game is built off of the idea of when you get faded, what are you going to do about it? Or when something is standing in your way, what are you going to do about it? How are you going to get past this? How are you going to get past this obstacle? We saw it on stream where Jonesy beat Secret Lorry Man's Hook. Jonesy's beaten my Hook before, and it was Scar. You know, that was with Scar, who, and Jonesy and I have talked about that could be Scar's worst matchup is against Hook. He pretty much blew me out of the water. Almost. I wasn't very close. You know, it wasn't like I was about to beat Pan. It was like he won. And I was like, whoa. You know, so there are a lot of surprises in this game. And one of the major factors of it is that you have to be ready for the things that potentially stand in your way to eventually come out on top.
I find this very interesting. We're talking about Dr. Facilier like this, because I've always, ever since I've gotten, like, since I started doing the podcast and the YouTube and everything, I've always been telling people at that stage in the game, for me, Dr. Facilier, in my opinion, is the best design character. Like, if future characters in Disney Villainous, like, they talk about how Jafar is, like, the character that everyone's kind of built around a little bit because he was the first one they felt like was the right one. I feel like Dr. Facilier is the first character that, like, he's powerful. He has a lot of cool tools, and he does, like, he has weaknesses, but he has tools to kind of overcome them relatively strongly. I guess I don't know what, so, like, I don't necessarily agree with all of you that he's the, like, the best in the game, but I definitely do agree that he's, like, upper entourage, personally. I think probably he's the most versatile of all the best characters, which I think is what makes them really stand out. Like, and you guys have already said this. I think the versatility sometimes can bite him though. But that's a story for another day. I talked about this today. I do believe Captain Hook is the best character in this game. I think he's the strongest in all the, like I said, Dr. Vassilier's most versatile. Hook also has a little bit of versatility, but not as strong as Dr. Vassilier. But I feel like Hook has got a lot more aggression that allows him to kind of circumvent anything that comes his way. I will also say two things when it comes to the best characters in this game. And you guys will probably all disagree with me on this. One of them I mentioned recently. I do feel that Ursula is the best character in this game on paper. She's very, so they give a comparison to a fighting game thing. Killer Instinct, the lead designer, was it Adam Hart? He talked about how there's a character, his name is Fulgor, who essentially on paper, he has all the tools to be the best character in the game. It just kind of depends on the person who is playing the character to make it work. I feel Ursula is the same thing. I think she has all the tools to make it work right. I just think that she has way too much of an adaptive play style, especially with the fact that unlike with a fighting game where it's more mind games, in a card game, there's a lot of somewhat randomness to it, and it's more about consistency. And she can be very adaptive, but it's not consistent enough to really make that effective, but her tools make her really stand out. On top of that, too, I will also say this. Gar is a momentum monster. I think you guys might have saw this if you guys were watching the stream with me playing against Secret Lawyer Man. When Scar gets his momentum, he is unstoppable. Like, there is nothing stopping Scar. Like, even if you Hakuna Matata him to death, you can't stop him. The downside is the fact that once you lose that momentum, you've lost. Like, you can lose the game within the first three turns if you lost your momentum to a halt. But if you can keep the momentum all the way through, he can crush any character in his way. Like, there is not a single character that can stop him. It's just that once you lose the momentum, he's destroyed. But that is my opinion. Apparently, the three folks here that have been playing and competing very heavily disagree. But hey, you know, it's fine. This is what makes this conversation fun. So,
I think they're...
Go for it.
I just, like we said at the beginning, I think the roster is really balanced, honestly. Like, I look through it, and there's, I think, one character I don't really want to play. And I think that might be even personal preference rather than power level. And, like, Jafar. But, I just think the order of his cards can be really awkward coming out, and it's just not something I enjoy. But, like, even like you're saying with Ursula, I think she has a lot of power in her design. My biggest problem with Ursula is I just don't find the play patterns super fun usually. But like, and I don't think she's the best character or anything like that. I think she's just, she's good. She's fine. Acceptable.
That's fine. I can accept that.
I think on Ursula's strongest games, she will make almost any opposing villain cry, and on her worst she will be useless, and that's the issue I take with her.
I gotcha.
I just feel like this game, like, it's so much on that I'm always comparing it to Super Smash Bros. Because all I can think about, or just fighting games in general, that you're like, oh, this is my character, like, this is who I play, like I'm the Hook guy, or I'm the Yzma guy, you know, like, we all kind of have like our styles, and they don't really mesh well with other characters. So like, I once played, like, if I try to play Ursula, I think I would rip my hair out because I just don't like that style of playing. I feel like it would freak me out a little bit. With Hook, I really enjoy his style. Just like the things that you can do with him, I find enjoyment in, like, personally, me. You know, that's not to say that everyone has to. Like, you're like, oh yeah, he's the best character in the game because his playstyle is so enjoyable. When someone could say, well, I don't enjoy playing Hook. You know, like, I enjoy playing this character, you know, like, that's, you know, like, that's them, or like, that's you, you know. It's like, that's kind of like the beauty of this game, is that I think we haven't even really scratched the surface yet of, like, people finding, like, finding their villain, like the one that they know they love to play, and they're like, this is it. Like, this is the one I resonate with the most. Like, I enjoy the play style. I really understand it well. And I don't have like a two. I think that was just it. Like, just that idea of we're going to find a lot more people that
probably have picks that are really unorthodox compared to like how we all saw Ursula being one of the worst characters in the game. There could be someone, Dronesy, you know, that pulls her out and just completely breaks her and says, like, yo, like, this is a player you should be scared of. Oh, who does he play? He plays Ursula. Isn't she the worst character in the game? No, like, not in the slightest. And, like, kind of what you were saying, Cincinnatus, about all the characters being balanced, I really do believe that. It's just a matter of finding it. Like, we have to find the secret. We have to find the things with the characters that work, you know?
Yeah, I think Scar is the perfect example of that, finding the secret, right? Mm-hmm. I don't think any of us will say that Scar is bad at this point. But I think a lot of those early strategies that we had for Scar, and we can credit you for a lot for this, Joker, but I think a lot of those early strategies were with Scar were just bad, and they were intuitive but not correct. And he punishes you very hard for mistakes. And I think that it's likely a lot of our conceptions of good or bad characters fall into that, you know.
I agree, because you know, when I first got into this game, you know, a lot of the strategy with Scar was, you know, dump a bunch of hyenas at one location and make that be the place where you want to kill stuff. And that, like, the thing is, like, that it is something that you can do. And actually, Secret Lawyer Man and I were talking about this, where, you know, he does kind of like to do that, but it will work in some games, but it won't work in every game. And the goal that I, even when I talked about this on the deep dives, is the fact that when you are playing a character, the goal when you play a character is to try to have a strategy that is going to be the most consistent against any player possible. You know, because obviously, yeah, like, you might need to adjust it a little bit on the fly, but you need to have a strategy that is going to work against any player and any play style that they're going to play with that character in order to come out on top. Because, you know, like what Brian said, you know, my strategy with my Scar did take out, you know, one of the probably best hooks out there. And, you know, that was not an easy feat. I remember when I beat Brian, I couldn't go to sleep that well that night because my brain was reeling. I was like, I did it. I finally did it, you know? But I'm like, I'm not done yet, you know? I have to do that multiple times now because I've lost a lot against Brian's hook playing Scar. Let's put it that way. A lot. But no, I mean, like, that's the thing is, like, you know, you gotta lose with the character and you gotta learn to get punched in the face a lot. And that just comes from me playing a lot of low tiers and fighting games. I know you guys haven't heard this yet, but I talked about on the last show about when I was playing Killer Instinct and when I was learning probably the hardest character in the game. And I eventually became top 10 with him in the world. And it was kind of sick. So take some time. Takes a lot of time with these characters. And speaking of time, that's all we have for the show. This was an awesome show. Thank you, three of you, for joining me on this show. This was absolutely a blast. I hope that for those of you listening, if you want to get a little bit more involved with Disney Villainous in terms of being a little bit more of a competitive game, whether you join us on Discord or you watch us on YouTube or Twitch, I hope at least in your own personal settings, you might look at this game in a different light now. I really do think that this game is very competitive, and I think it's designed very well for it. And I don't think it was anything that Ravensburger or Prospero Hall was expecting, although I know they probably designed it inherently to be that way too, because the designers on that team are very card game background heavy. You know, I was telling in the Discord that the guy who designed Radigan and Pete came from Magic the Gathering. So it's very clear that these folks have a background in building very competitive trading card games. But thank you, Brian. Thank you, Cincy. Thank you, Shattered Ice. I really appreciate it.
Yeah.
Anytime. Happy to be here.
Yeah. But until then, everybody, we're going to go ahead and wrap up the show. I know all of you probably are screaming at me right now because when the show airs, Marvel Villainous will have been released and you're like, where's your Marvel Villainous review? Well, you can't review a game in a day when it comes out. So expect that next time on the show. But until then, I hope you folks enjoy the show. Stay happy, stay healthy, stay safe. And as always, stay delightfully wicked. We'll see you folks on the next episode when we decide to review Marvel Villainous. Until then, we'll see you later. And that is it. Now Craig is going to leave us.